Here's John Williams.
All right, let's see what we got for you. Actually, we got a lot for you. It's 108. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We will today on the show go back to something that was said on yesterday's show, and that came from Saturday Night Live when they reminded us that, what was it, half of the guns in the United States are owned by 3% of the people. And I said, wait a minute, that, how do we not know that? Half of the guns in the United States are owned by 3% of the people. That gun ownership in this country is 28%? I thought it was half. Steve Bertrand said, all right, but say it's 28%. But then is that adults or is that people? And if it's adults, then you throw out half of the population, they're kids. And if people live in families of four, then really how many households are exposed to guns? I said, I don't know. I don't know any of these things. So we reached out to the people that did that research, and they will join us after two. We'll play part of the monologue, which was spot on. I mean, it was funny. It was smart. It made you think in ways you maybe hadn't, right? If you own 47 cats, the government will come and take your cats. You have too many cats. You own 47 guns, suddenly that's a right. So what's the difference in who owns how much? Because all of that. We'll just play a little bit of it and then ask the people that did the research to give us a perspective on who has how many guns, blah, 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 after two. You see the story in the paper about the guy that got hit by the baseball at the Cubs game? So it happened to a couple people at Cubs games. Sox game this year, too. To say nothing of that Yankees-Twins tilt where the little girl got blasted in the head. She's alive. I don't know what her status is. But people are injured 1,700 times a year. So we'll visit with the personal injury attorney who is representing one guy who's suing the Cubs for $50,000. We'll also talk a little bit about the Cubs game yesterday. This is what happens when the Cubs get into the World Series, and I'll forgive you and me if we didn't know this because we really don't have a lot of experience in this, but when we go into the playoffs, our manager will make you crazy. That's the way it's going to be. That's the way it's going to be. How do you pull that pitcher at that point of the game? Schwarber drops what should have been the third out. They even put on the screen, and I don't really love this statistic, the catchability of a fly ball. How did they calculate that? It was an 82% catchable ball.
Was it my catchability?
Oh, I could have caught that. You could have caught that.
Here we go.
Well, really, I mean, if we were there and it was hitting our glove, I think we would have caught it.
If Kyle Schwarber couldn't catch it, there's no way you or I could have caught it.
I'll bet half of the people in the stands could have caught that ball.
Now you're factoring in the way the ball is moving and everything. I'm sorry. They make it look much easier than it is.
Half of the people in the stands aren't getting paid $1 million to catch that ball, I'll tell you that.
Well, I hope you felt a little responsible.
For what did I do about the ball that Schwarber dropped?
Jinxed him.
I did. I so did. We were talking to Sam Panionovich yesterday right here on this very show. And we were talking about the lineup the Cubs are going to trot out there. A lot of left-handers, et cetera, et cetera. I said, well, Schwarber's going to play. His defense is a little suspect, though. Then I apologized for that. I said, I don't want to put that on Schwarber, but is he really?
I think the quote was, please don't hit it to left field.
I did say that. I did. And Sam said, well, he is a below average left fielder. And then we just sort of left it at that. The jinx lingering and then traveling north to Wrigley Field. Speaking of science, I want to talk about Harvey Weinstein in a second. First, let's not let Richard Thaler's moment completely go unnoticed, the Nobel Prize winner from the University of Chicago, who has helped, according to the Wall Street Journal today, advance automatic enrollment in retirement savings plans and automatic increases in contributions to these plans. I suppose if it was left to our own devices, we'd be less likely to do it. He said we don't always behave in our best interest. We don't act like rational beings, and economic theory says it's economic theory. People behave rationally. He said, oh, huh. And based on some of his research, it sounds like models are set up now to sort of protect us from our own worst instincts. So automatic contributions to plans, a major shift in how Americans save money. He also influenced public policy on smoking and organ donations and beyond. He said, I believe I basically have made a career stealing ideas from psychologists, The Economist quipped. He challenged the popular view in economic theory that individual decision-making was rational, predictable, and easily modeled. So then, Having read that, I said on the Twitter, actually this was on Facebook, a University of Chicago professor got a Nobel Prize for saying that people make purchasing decisions that aren't always rational. So then why didn't I get a Nobel Prize when I bought that Chevy Chevette? That was a funny thing when I said it on the internet.
Or my Snackster.
Or that travel bread maker. Or that VHS to beta video recorder. Or when you bought those his and hers Google glasses.
Espresso machine.
We have basements full of evidence. We knew this all along. I mean, seriously, how do you get a Nobel Prize for going, you know, you shouldn't have bought that. I could have told you that, honey. We all knew that. How is that a Nobel Prize? So with an ellipsis after that, I said, okay, so tell me the thing you bought that proves the theory that we don't always make rational decisions. That's on my Facebook page where I'm King John. I don't want to be accused, and I certainly won't accuse you, of blaming the victim. But once again, I do not understand how that many people in Hollywood knew about Harvey Weinstein's behavior and nobody said or did anything about it. And the women who say that they were sexually harassed or assaulted and then either took the settlements or said nothing, I'm a little angry at today. And I've had passing conversations with people whose opinions I respect, many of them women, about this. And they said, well, if even those stars, say a Kate Winslet, had spoke out and said Harvey Weinstein is a sexual harasser or predator, well, then that would doom her career. And I said, no, wouldn't. She's Kate Winslet. She's Meryl Streep. She's, you know, pick them. These women are of a position where they can say that stuff. They can out this guy or criticize this guy and still have a career. And I'll ask you this, too. Suppose they aren't. That is, what if, in fact, that accusation or revelation would doom their career or compromise it, right? I suppose they'd still be on Dancing with the Stars, but they wouldn't be opening major motion pictures. So then it's okay? So therefore your self-interest trumps everybody else's? I mean, it's a quandary for them, but really, if you knew, shouldn't you have been doing something about it? I'm mystified by this part of the story. Am I on to something here, or am I completely off my rocker? And boy, now that everybody goes back, we're Bill Cosbying this thing. You go, oh yeah, there's the proof, there's the evidence. Oh yeah, remember when they said that? Oh yeah, this person said that. And now the evidence is everywhere when you Monday morning quarterback it. Well, all of those, look, I wasn't paying attention to that. I didn't know. Meryl Streep, by the way, now says she had no idea that this was going on. She'd worked with him in the past, and it was respectful. But good Lord, a lot of people did, and they said and did nothing. I mean, I just don't understand how, for put it this way, if you're Harvey Weinstein and some of these stars come out and expose you, how do you survive it? Forget about Kate Winslet. I think she would. But how is it that Harvey Weinstein thinks he can get away with it? And I'm told, well, you don't appreciate how significant a player he is. He's the only guy that makes movie in Hollywood. And by the way, maybe he won't be making movies in Hollywood. He won't be such a player if people will just call him out. But they don't. I'm a guy, and I've never been in this position, so I'm speaking from a place of ignorance. But somebody needs to educate me. By the way, I also posted on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm WGN King John on Twitter. WGN King John on Twitter. Like me there. I posted there today something that Emma McElhern got me thinking about. She was wondering what the different denominations would be if our currency, instead of having presidents, had candy on it. So then I went ahead and did it from a penny to a $100 bill. Who should be what? The Hershey bar, by the way, is our common denomination. It's the $1 bill. I don't think there's any argument about that. Candy corns or pennies, it's all pretty apparent. I've laid it out on my Twitter account. Flashback to the 80s and laugh along with the Goldbergs, starring Chicago's very own Jeff Garland. That's weeknights at 10:30 and 11 on WGN-TV. Hey, can you recognize the signs of structural foundation problems? Many homeowners across Chicagoland and northwest Indiana are experiencing the symptoms of structural foundation issues. Have you noticed the doors or windows don't shut properly? Maybe you've got cracks in the drywall or the exterior brickwork. Maybe the floors are uneven. That could be a sign of damage to your home's foundation. Now, before you pay an expensive consultation fee just to determine the problem. Call PermaSeal at 1-800-421-SEAL for a free inspection. A certified structural consultant will thoroughly evaluate your foundation and get you a permanent solution. For 38 years, PermaSeal's been doing this. Honest, trustworthy, fast. They do a good job, and they give you a transferable warranty. Lifetime. Boy, that's peace of mind. Call 1-800-421-SEAL, 1-800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net. Listen, we're going to be on stage with Thomas Jefferson. And speaking of shows, thanks to all of you who attended Podcast Fest last weekend. Oh, and thanks to Malnati's for giving us some delicious pizza and salad. I didn't know the green room was going to be so stocked. That was fantastic.
Was there salad there?
There was. And there were four kinds of Lou Malnati's pizza. I will do Podcast Fest next year just for that. I better, because we don't get paid to do it. So if it's not for the love of the game, at least there's good pizza. Oh, so we're going to do Thomas Jefferson on stage December 2nd. And I want you to get tickets to the show. This will be at the Blizzard Theater on the Elgin Community College campus. December 2nd, TJ and I on stage. I'll ask him questions about how he feels about statues and IQs and whatever else is in the news. And you get to ask him questions, too. We're calling this show Self-Evident Truths. Go to WGNradio.com/events to get your tickets. It's sponsored by American Sale. Linda, you're on WGN. This is John Williams. What'd you want to say, Linda?
You know, John, I just wanted to say I am just shocked that you're shocked about Harvey Weinstein. Have you read anything about women in Hollywood in the 30s and 40s and 50s?
I have. I haven't read about them in the 2010s, though, being in the same place. I thought they were a little more empowered.
Look at what the president did when he talked about the woman on the lot with Billy Bush. You know, come on. This goes on daily. And Kate Winslet wasn't Kate Winslet at the time. She was an 18 or 19-year-old girl trying to make a career for herself. And she was afraid to go against someone that strong and powerful.
Yeah.
So you can't blame these women for not speaking out. This has happened for decades, and they're afraid. And this has happened to women all the time.
You know, the revelation to me, evidently, then here, Linda, is that times haven't changed. You know, I just thought times, either social media or public awareness or intolerance, that we wouldn't put up with that anymore. That if a young woman came forward and said Harvey Weinstein did this to me, I'm of a mind that that would damage Harvey Weinstein and that the woman would recover from that.
Can I just say we elected him president, not Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah.
So what was the penalty for seeing that on videotape?
That is a good point. That is a good point. Now, thanks for calling, Linda. Have a good day.
Sure.
Yeah, I appreciate you listening. By the way, I don't know if you've heard this, but on a loudspeaker and video screen on the public lawn in front of the Washington Monument in your nation's capital, they ran a 24-hour loop last week of the Billy Bush tape. I mean, all of it. And it's stunning. Loudspeakers blaring out in front of the giant phallic symbol on the mall there. I don't know if that was art or awareness or anger, but as we come upon the history, the one-year anniversary of the revelation of that, the release of that, somebody did that. And that they got a permit to do it. And it's just shocking. In fact, they asked President, do we have the audio of this is President Trump, since you brought it up. Thank you for the call. So there's a couple of sound bites here. The first is President Trump commenting on Harvey Weinstein.
I've known Harvey Weinstein for a long time. I'm not at all surprised to see it.
Really? So, really? And then sound bite number two is they said, well, then what about if you think that's bad, then what do you have to say about the Billy Bush tape?
He says they were inappropriate. That's locker room.
That's locker room talk. Just so you never forget, and we should not, go back, Google the videotape, watch the videotape, listen to the videotape. It's stunning. Everybody remembers the P word. There is so much more to it than that. It is so predatory and so coarse. It is stunning. That says nothing about the man as president, but we should never forget that a guy got away with that. Boy, I shouldn't forget it, right? And was able to become president. It's stunning. Okay, this is Amy. You're on WGN. Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. You asked why women don't speak up, but often they do speak up and are silenced. And 20 years ago when I was 19, my best friend was sexually assaulted. And I found her afterwards and took her to the hospital and the police station. And we had to come back to the police station the next morning to report it again. And the police officer told her, well, we found the perpetrator, but he said it was consensual. He was very candid about it. So we left. We were 19, and this was 20 years ago. So I absolutely empathize with when it takes 10 or 20 years for something to come out, because as the last caller said, Kate Winslet wasn't Kate Winslet. And she maybe did speak out to an agent, to her manager, but was silenced. No one's going to believe you. It wasn't that bad. Just keep working. This happens all the time. Like, women are silenced when they're younger, and all it happens up to this day, just as you pointed out with the president. Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call. Here's a couple of other sound bites for you. This is, and I don't understand this one. This is Donna Karan talking about Harvey Weinstein. She's the fashion mogul. This is Donna Karan.
How do we present ourselves as women? What are we asking? Are we asking for it, you know, by presenting all the sensuality and all the sexuality? You know, how much do they show? I don't think it's only Harvey Weinstein. I think he's being looked at right now, you know, as a symbol, you know, and how women are dressing and what are they asking for? Trouble.
She's now said that that was taken out of context. I'm not exactly sure what context it was otherwise in. Those were her words.
I don't think there was a gray area in that.
I don't know why I have no idea why she would say that. Because she says she doesn't believe it. I can't imagine she does. But good grief, lady, you just said that. That's what guys say who don't get it. And that's coming from me right now. One more soundbite for you. This is Jane Krakowski as Jenna Maroney on 30 Rock.
Oh, please. I'm not afraid of anyone in show business. I turned down intercourse with Harvey Weinstein on no less than 3 occasions out of 5.
Maybe it's not just the women I'm mad at or mystified by. It's just Hollywood in general. I mean, plenty of guys, you didn't know about this too? That's just, I mean, and I wonder who else then is praying out there, particularly since this was a guy who was on the other side, right? He was making these empowering movies. He was embraced by people whose liberal causes would include fighting sexual harassment. And there he was in their midst. What a story. So here's the story. Schaumburg man hit blinded by a foul ball at Wrigley Field is suing the Cubs. Do you know how many people get hit by balls each year? 1,750 on average get hit and injured by, I guess, bats and balls at Major League Baseball games. There's the story of this John J. Luce of Schaumburg broke his nose and 6 bones around his left eye this year. He was at a game in August. He's filed a lawsuit against the Cubs and Major League Baseball seeking at least $50,000 in damages. And he wasn't one of these guys that's on. He wasn't on a cell phone. In fact, he said, I'm a student of the game. I like to watch the outfielders position themselves during certain at-bats. So when the ball's thrown, I like to see if the center fielder is moving, anticipating maybe the pitch or the swing. And while he was doing that, he got hit in the face by a ball. It's a story that happens more and more often now, and the solution is we need more netting around the playing area. And everybody loses their undies about this or their lunch about this. They get their undies in a knot. I don't think they're actually losing their undies about this. But I think what you should do is put up more netting. And if you don't like the black nylon netting, I think we need to make netting out of the same stuff that fishing line is made out of, really clear, strong stuff. But that's a different conversation. Colin Dunn is on a phone line. He's an attorney representing that John Luce of Schaumburg. Colin, it's John Williams. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thank you for having me.
What do you want to say about what I've said so far?
We agree 100%. 100%. That would, if the netting, I was in St. Louis last week to see the Cubs clinch it and notice the netting went to the edge of the dugout down there, the far edge, and had we had the same netting at Wrigley Field, John Luce would not be in the position he's in right now.
He was in aisle or section 135. So tell me, in relation, how far back was he? In relation to the dugout or third base was he? That sort of thing.
So he's up the first baseline a little bit, and he's row 11, I think seat 107. And, you know, so he's definitely near the field, near the action, which a lot of people want to be. And as you said, he was watching the game. He wasn't on his phone. He wasn't, you know, drinking beers like the bleachers.
Do you know what the velocity was of the ball coming off the bat? Sometimes we have that.
We don't have that yet. That's part of our investigation. We'll figure that out, but we don't have that yet.
That kid at Yankee Stadium, the ball was hit 105 miles an hour. 105 miles right. an hour.
Unbelievable. No, nobody can get out of the way of that. If it doesn't hit you, it's because it missed you, not because you got out of the way.
So what about the language on the ticket itself?
Well, Jay actually didn't have a ticket. He was an invitee of the Cubs. He wasn't given a ticket. But either way, that ticket in no way do you assume the risk of what Jay experienced, what that speed of the ball, that's not something that you're recognizing as a risk, that most people recognize as a risk when they sit in those seats. You know foul balls will come in there, but as you pointed out, the girl at 105 miles an hour and Jay's ball that was fast enough to cause the damage that it did is not something that you would anticipate.
What was the damage that it did?
Well, it shattered his eye socket. He's had he's had three surgeries at this point, I think, and he's got two more on the way. He's likely to lose the eye. Doctors are doing their best and are hopeful, but that's something that he's coming to grips with. If that ends up being what they recommend, he's going to have to do that.
If there had been the net that you want, if there had been the net you want, but this had still occurred because the ball traveled beyond the net, something else happened, would you still be filing this suit?
Well, I think for Jay, if the netting had been in place, this would not have happened. I think our early investigation shows that. But, you know, in certain places, Japan, for instance, they have netting that goes foul pole to foul pole. And we don't think that inhibits the fans' enjoyment of the game out there. So we don't think having something similar here would do that. And I mean, to be honest with you, where Jay has told us and has told the media that he does not want this to happen to anybody else. And that's his goal here.
Yeah. So the way you get their attention is to sue him for at least $50,000. How much money do you think your client deserves or will get?
I think that's a factor of his injuries and prognosis, and it's too soon to tell that. We'll figure that out as based on what the doctors tell us.
But if he loses vision in his eye, and he's a relatively young man, what is his age? 60. What is he again?
60.
60. So this is a guy that could live another 40 years, more or less, whatever, without vision in one eye. That's a terrible impediment. I think that's worth a lot of money. Or it's worth zero because it's not the team's fault. You know, that accidents happen and we can't have 1,700 people suing baseball every game, every year, you know?
Well, it'll be up to the jury, John. They'll figure that out for us.
Well, listen, I'm on your side. I mean, I've long said that it's insane what we ask people to do. You know, if I took my mom or dad to a game, they're in their 80s. What, they can't go to a game or they can't have good seats? That's not fair. So they sit there and they couldn't protect themselves. I don't know if I could protect them either. We're all just sitting ducks there. Heck, Addison Russell launched his bat again. That guy needs to get some pine tar. Bats go into the stands as well.
Sure. And I think if you look at the players, they, from what I've read, the players are all for more netting. And they're dealing with this on a day-in, day-out basis. They see how fast the balls go in to the stands, and I listen to the players when they say that there should be more netting.
What do the fans want? I mean, is there a consensus out there?
I don't see a consensus. I honestly don't see people on the other side of more netting on that side of the argument. I think from sitting behind the netting personally, after a minute or two, you don't even know it's there anymore.
I agree with you on that. Have you been to a hockey game? Maybe that's a lighting issue and you don't notice it as much, but you got everybody's looking through nets, or all the good seats are looking through nets, and you don't even think about it.
You forget it's there. It doesn't impact me and my enjoyment of the game at all. So I don't see the downside to more netting. I haven't seen anybody articulate a downside to more netting. So,
by the way, Wayne just wanted to make this observation. You're on WGN. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Hey, John, how you doing? I'm a longtime fan. And just speaking for the fans, I've written to the commissioner, both Bud Selig and Rob Manfred, about this for many years. And the point I always make is the people paying for the high-priced seats behind home plate, where, you know, foul balls hit that screen all the time. Do you ever hear those people complaining about the netting there?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Wayne, thank you for the call. Your comment on that, Colin?
I agree. You know, they used to call that area the slaughter pen back in the day before they had netting there. And I think, you know, that now that term can be extended to the people up and down those lines because they are in harm's way. They are in a hot zone, and Major League Baseball needs to protect them.
So you want them to, A, pay your client whatever the right amount of money is, but you also want them to put up a net. And where will the net be if you had your way?
Well, we're going to hire experts that will tell us the safest and most effective place to put netting. I think that's something that we'll present as part of our case in this lawsuit. But I look, as I pointed out, Japan has it foul pole to foul pole, and I haven't read anything from any fans in Japan that say that that impacts their enjoyment of the game one iota.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Good luck to your client. Good luck to the Cubs. I mean, none of us benefits from the Cubs losing money or fans or a positive experience. But I think this is something that could be fixed tomorrow. And it's a shame that it will require something like this to make that happen. We'll stay in touch, Colin. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me again.
You bet. It's my pleasure. Colin Dunn is a personal injury attorney at the Clifford Law Offices, representing John Luce, who was blinded by a foul ball. Actually, blinded may be premature. He said they're trying to save the eye, I presume the vision, at a Cubs game in August. John, do you really expect Streep to say she knew all along after the fact? I don't know Meryl Streep. I don't think she's a liar. I think she did not know. She categorically said online today she did not. John, blaming the victims for not doing something when you have no clue about the circumstances? Yeah, I don't know that I was blaming the victims, but I'm asking why these people don't speak up. I don't know that that's blaming. If you want to call it that, you can. But men and women seem to know about this, and now everybody's saying there was this elephant in the room. I simply began the show asking, how is it that in 2017, people still don't have the courage or the ability to act? And say the offense occurred 20 years ago or 10 years ago. Say the actor or actress was just on their way up then and they didn't feel empowered. Well, what about now? Why did it take this for everybody to go, oh, yeah, that guy, we all, oh, boy, we knew. John, the only explanation I have is that his behavior must be rampant in Hollywood.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Wow.
Here's John Williams.
Just had another one. Listen to this. It's 209 on WGN. This is John. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. On Michigan Avenue all the way until 3 o'clock. Earlier we were talking about what to do about fans that get hit by baseballs that go into the stands. You may have heard our conversation with the attorney representing a man whose face was hit by a line drive. 6 surgeries. He may lose the eye. They're suing the Cubs. That was our conversation. I said they ought to put up a net, and if the black netting is too obstruct, you know, it's too much in the way, then they could make the netting out of the same color of, or maybe even consistency as, the fishing line. It's clear. It would reflect, and you'd see through it and around it, and the light would bounce off of it more easily. Somebody sent me this note. They said, hey, John, your brain automatically subtracts an obstruction that's there all the time. It's like the reflection on your TV screen. It's there, but you don't see it. Your brain compensates. And I think that's probably true, right? That when you are looking through the netting at a hockey game, and you are, or at a baseball game, if you've got good seats, you don't even think about it anymore. Your brain compensates. What an interesting point. But somebody pointed this out. Hey, John, on the suit against the Cubs, what about professional golf? Do you realize the exit speed of a golf ball and how ridiculously close spectators stand to the driver? What, are we going to put up netting there too? Says Craig in Schaumburg. We looked it up. A golf ball off a tee travels on average 180 miles an hour. That's an Indy car coming at you.
Mine goes faster if it's toward a tree.
Mine goes farther if it's going towards a tree.
So I don't want to get all gun control on you again.
Yeah, but I'm about to do it.
Well, I just want to, you know, it's interesting what we react to and what we don't. So, you know, here are 20 people a year get hit at a ballpark, and we're willing to completely refabricate the way people watch the game and through what they watch the game.
The number's higher than that, but it's a minority. I said 1,700 people.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I thought you said 170.
But, I mean, they do.
I'm having trouble with numbers
today.
They
do tens of millions of people. I mean, if you want to play the percentage game, your point's taken. It doesn't happen to most folks. So what's your point?
Just that how we will react and change the way we do things for some situations, but if it's shootings, we're not going to change gun laws, or we're not going to change restrictions or background checks. You know, that's a much bigger problem. More people
that's
involved.
Interesting.
Deadly. We won't do anything there, but if we have 1,700 out of 30 million, we're going to require the ballparks completely changed.
Think about that, though. If you live in Austin or Inglewood, your chance of getting shot is much higher than if you live in the Gold Coast or in Schaumburg or something like that. Let's go to that point. The reason we're even going to go to this conversation again today is because of something that came up yesterday. On Monday, we played back part of the weekend update on Saturday Night Live.
The investigation into the tragedy in Las Vegas this week has sparked a larger debate in America between people who want common sense gun control and people who are wrong. This shouldn't be a partisan issue. The guy had 47 guns. No one should own 47 of anything. If you own 47 cats, you are not a responsible pet owner. You're a crazy cat lady. And unlike with guns, the government will actually come and take your cats away because everyone agrees that's insane. Also, this guy bought 33 of his guns in the past year, and that didn't set off any kind of alert. If I buy $100 worth of Chick-fil-A, I get a text message from my bank that says, did you just purchase $100 worth of Chick-fil-A? Please, Colin, tell us this is fraud. How is no one keeping track of how many guns people own? There is a real law in Texas that says it's illegal to own more than 6 dildos. And I get why. No one needs that many. If you have more than 6, it's a clear sign you are training for something awful.
I mean, who are these delicate snowflakes that we can't just tell, no, you're not allowed to have 40 guns anymore, Earl. From now on, you can have 1 gun, max, and 6 bullets. If you can't hit what you're shooting with 6 bullets, then you don't need to be shooting at it. Learn karate or use your words. I'm sick of this narrative that Americans just love guns so much. It's not true. 78% of Americans don't even own a gun. And 3% of Americans own 50% of all the guns in the country. That's the problem.
And that's the shocker to me. 78% of Americans don't have a gun, and 3% of Americans own half of them? So we Googled that, and it said that that was according to a study done by the Harvard Injury Control Research Center. And from there is Deb Israel, who joins us now on WGN Radio. Hi, Deb. It's John Williams. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm doing well, thanks.
You got Chicago roots, I hear.
I do. I'm rooting for the Cubs.
Where are you from?
Grew up on the South Side, but I was always a Cubs fan, not a Sox fan.
So an outlier always, you, huh?
Exactly.
Well, so what do you make of my surprise? I mean, did everybody know this? I mean, because the gun debate to me seems to be so evenly matched, or that the people that advocate for gun ownership are winning. And so I've assumed then that that's because more people have guns than don't. I would have guessed it would have been at least 51%. Talk to me about at least my surprise about these statistics.
Well, I think we've known for quite a while. There are two different things that have been measured consistently over time. One is the percentage of people who say that they personally own a gun. So that's 22%, which leads to your 78% of people who don't personally own a gun. And the other question is, do you live in a household with a gun?
Oh.
And about 1 out of 3 households in the U.S. Contain a gun. One thing that's striking about both of those figures is that they've been relatively stable over the past decade or so.
1 in 3 of us live in a house with a gun. Is that what you said?
Yep, depending on where in the country you live.
Right, and if maybe you're in the rural South, then it's probably a higher percentage than that, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
as is personal gun ownership.
Okay, so now I'm I'll factor that into my shock and dismay here, but maybe that makes a little more sense. So 1 in 3 Americans are in a household where they could get a gun if they wanted one.
That's correct.
Still, that's 2/3 of the people don't even have access to a gun in their house then, put another way. How confident are you in the accuracy of your findings?
Well, we're pretty confident of the accuracy of our findings. It's based on a good survey of 4,000 people that was done in a way that, you know, was representative of U.S. adults. The results comport with a couple of other surveys that have been done over the same period of time. There may clearly be some people who are not telling us that they own guns or possibly even who are telling us that they have guns when they don't, but the evidence out there suggests that people tend to respond honestly.
Well, the bad guys don't. I mean, the crooks, criminals, and liars don't. I mean, what about illegal guns or criminals with guns, that sort of thing?
Well, the question is whether or not they're willing to participate in surveys at all. And so probably it's reasonable to think that they're less likely to participate in surveys, but these are folks who have agreed to participate in surveys on a whole range of things, and we just used this group of 50,000 people who are this big panel, and you know, we ask them about guns, other people ask them about, you know, what cars they own, what they think about politics and the like. We probably undercount guns that are owned illegally.
We undercount guns that are owned illegally. Yeah, and I wonder if that, in your estimation, would skew these numbers much, that the percentage of ownership or access to a gun would be higher. By how much?
Well, we estimate that there are about 270 million guns in the United States. That estimate, if you look at the number of guns that have been manufactured or imported into the United States since about 1900, when people add those up, it comes out to about 330 million guns. So the big question is, you know, since 1900, how many guns have been taken out of circulation? They're durable, but 270
sounds about right.
Right. It's certainly not way off if the upper bound is somewhere around 330 million.
And then what about antique guns, are you counting operable firearms here as opposed
no.
to antiques,
I mean,
or
yeah.
collectibles?
Sorry, yes. When we ask people, we specify that we're talking about, you know, operable guns and excluding things like black powder guns and the like, which aren't you know, which don't require background checks and the like. So we're asking about sort of standard issue firearms.
Handguns
or long guns.
Semi-automatic guns, long guns, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, precisely.
And then just briefly comment on the 3% that Michael Che mentioned there that owns 50% of the guns. I mean, that's just another stunning statistic to me.
Well, so it's 3% of the U.S. population, right? It's about 14% of gun owners, which translates into 3% of the population. And yeah, that it is stunning. It's funny. I just read this morning a statistic that America has 4.5% of the U.S. population and half the guns in the world, according to another set of surveys.
So no, say that again. Do that again. America has what?
We have 4.5% of the U.S. population, I mean, of the
world's
population,
yeah.
And half of all the guns. So it's sort of an interesting parallel there, right? You know, we know ownership is really concentrated, and it's important to remember that what we know in terms of risk, we don't know very much about whether having access to one gun puts you at greater risk, less risk than having access to 10 guns. What we know is having access to any guns increases risk of suicide and homicide, not just for the gun owner, but for everybody in their household. And so there's a lot of work we should be doing to be thinking about people who own, you know, one or two guns compared to people who own, you know, 15 or 20 guns. But in terms of the big public outcomes, which are, you know, the 22,000 suicides that occur with a firearm every year, the 16,000 homicides, we know that having access to any gun is a crucial risk there.
Well, and, you know, as you're kind of making me think about a bunch of things here. On a phone line is Deb Asriel. She is with the Harvard Injury Control Research Center. Michael Che was quoting those numbers on Weekend Update Saturday night, and we played it back on Monday. This is where those statistics came from. But I'm wondering if everybody listening to this conversation will now feel justified in their and the rightness of their position. The people that are for guns were like, yeah, see, that's why you got to get some guns, or that's, I don't know how they justify it, but maybe they'll listen to this and find it affirming the same way I might look at this and go, yeah, see, that's the problem here. And I don't know what people are supposed to do, I guess, is my point with this information. Deb, comment on that, and maybe you've got a question or a comment too. We're talking about gun ownership in America because of what happened in Las Vegas, and because of a couple of statistics that were pointed out on Weekend Update Saturday night. We reached out to Harvard Injury Control Research Center member Deb Israel, who is not a lifelong Chicagoan. I guess you, where do you live now, Deb? Where do you make your home?
I live in Boston.
You love it out there too, I'll bet, huh?
I do. But I miss Chicago.
I just want to ask you about one other statistic here that I'm reading in a USA Today story last fall about your research, and it points out the racial composition of gun owners. It says 16% of gun owners in America are Hispanic and 14% are African American. Am I reading that right?
No. I think what you're reading is that 14% of Hispanics are gun owners. 16% of or 14% of African Americans, 16% of Hispanics, as compared to something on the order of, I don't have the statistic right in front of me, but 40% of whites.
So 40% of the gun owners are white? Is that what you're
saying?
No,
40% of
whites own
whites
guns.
Own a gun, something like that. And then the other two have to do with the fraction of African Americans and the fraction of Hispanics.
Okay, but then by race, if you will, whites are more likely to own a gun than African Americans or Hispanics. Is that true?
That's right.
Yeah, and I wonder if that sort of challenges people's belief. You go into the city and you're worried you're going to get mugged, maybe by a person of color. But in fact, the white person is more likely to be armed in America than an African American, correct?
That's correct.
However, that doesn't account for the disparity of maybe in a high crime part of a city, then those numbers would change, wouldn't they?
They might change. I mean, the truth is, I mean, the fundamental fact is that gun owners overall, I mean, white men, relatively more affluent, relatively more suburban and rural, are at very low risk of criminal victimization by any measure, any aggregate measure. They own a disproportionate share of the guns. They are a disproportionate share of folks who kill themselves with guns annually. And they're, you know, just the crime statistics would suggest they're also at low at low risk of crime, and therefore at low risk of needing a gun to defend themselves. But
your organization is nonpartisan. You're just cranking out the statistics. Am I right?
That's right. We're a bunch of academics.
Like that's a bad thing. No, that's a good thing. Deb,
So what's harder, being an academic at Harvard or growing up on the South Side being a Cubs fan?
That's a good question. Ernie Banks took me through all of my life's hardest moments. So.
Oh, that's the title of your book. Holy cow, Deb. Ernie Banks Got Me Through Life's Most Difficult Moments by Deb Asriel, who is at Harvard. All right, Deb, come to Chicago sometime. Sit in our studio, okay?
I would love to do that. Thanks very much for speaking.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing what you do. Steve, can the county board vote to keep the soda tax but cut it in half instead of a penny an ounce, make it half a penny an ounce, something like that?
Well, that's not what's before them right now. Right now, this is the Finance Committee, not the full board, but they're considering a repeal of it.
The whole kit and caboodle.
Right.
And then they could re-kit and re-caboodle it if they wanted.
The whole corn syrup, cane sugar, and aspartame.
Yeah, right. Hey, speaking of candy and sweets, so as you know, I posted on my Twitter account, I am WGN King John. Follow me on Twitter. I'm WGN King John. I want to be king someday. So I put, if candy were U.S. currency, then the penny would be a Jelly Belly. You know, fast, quick currency, small, boom, 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 boom.
Thought it was candy corn earlier today.
It moved to the dime spot. So you've got Jelly Bellies at a penny. Hershey's Kisses are a nickel. Candy corns are a dime. A little more substantial. And frankly, I think they actually have more heft, if you will. At 25 cents, I've got an individual wrapped Starburst. Your dollar would be the Hershey bar. I think that's our common currency. Everything ultimately should be measured in Hershey bars.
I think that's your best choice so far.
Baby Ruth
is... Do not go with the Starburst at all.
Baby Ruth is the $5 bill. On the 10, I would put the Three Musketeers frozen. And then my 20 is... And that's maybe your most common or popular. That's the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. The Snickers is the $100 bill. Sam Panionovich, following various issues, immediately posted on my page that he's going to boycott this list until the gummy bears make an appearance. And I think they are conspicuously absent. I'll have to find a way to get them in there.
Make them the Susan B. Anthony.
Right. Maybe it's the $2 coin.
What is the... what's the... The peppermint mint, not the chocolate, you know, not the thin mint, but the one, the peppermint patty, the York peppermint patty.
Yeah.
That's coin shape. I think that should be the half dollar.
That's not what this is about, Steve.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not about.
What do you mean it's not what this is about? I'm assigning a candy, a currency.
Yeah, but you're doing it wrong. Well, it's not about, well, does it look like a coin or money? It's how.
First of all, a Starburst is not even its own entity, so that cannot be a...
I'm not comfortable with that in that position, I'll be honest with you.
Thank you very much. Peppermint patty?
Fine. You don't even know what it's called. You don't even know what it's called, so don't tell me that that one needs to go there.
Okay. Besides, that's too popular of a position. You're right.
I need to find a way to work gummy bears in there. Maybe the Starburst goes out.
Gummy bears? Come on.
That is my favorite food, along with the Jelly Bellies. But I got to tell you... I have a sort of lifelong affection for the Hershey bar.
Yeah, I think the Hershey bar is perfectly placed.
$1 bill. Boom. That's who we are.
Isn't there a grand candy bar?
There is a $100,000 bar.
Okay.
Adam Herman, formerly of the Sun-Times. Is he a DNA info now? Adam Herman tweeted
Andrew
immediately.
Andrew Herman.
What did I say? Adam. Andrew Herman said, he said, what about the $100,000 bar? Does that get to be the $100,000 bill? We're only going up to 100 on this list. Sorry, Adam.
See, you've got the Necco wafers, but...
Andrew.
That's terrible.
Oh,
you
Necco wafers.
So well.
Necco wafers, right. So you're going to put Necco wafers in there because those look like coins.
No, I'm saying you can't because they're part of a package.
Okay, right. So things that are there only because they exist as a group should not belong. Well, then there goes Jelly Bellies and, I believe, gummy bears.
A jelly bean's a penny, so that's okay.
Fair enough. Judy, thanks for joining us. We're mystified that you're still listening. What can we do for you?
I'm just waiting for the game to go on. And I still sing the national anthem because you don't get that over the radio in my car.
Excuse me, why are you calling this show? I'm at a loss here.
Okay, your candy theorem for money exchange.
Yes, right.
Okay. Do you know you'll be either at... you'll be at the dry cleaner every day from things melting in your pockets unless you plan on getting them insulated like one of those lunch bags.
John, I think
Or are we going to have to get...
Hold on one second, Judy.
I think she's thinking a little further than you usually do.
Is she speaking in English? Because I don't understand a word she's saying.
Well, it's the Hershey bar and you put it in your wallet.
Right. Right. Oh, she's actually transforming it into literal currency.
Right.
And the coins in your pocket are the Hershey's Kisses, and they're going to melt when you take it to the dry cleaners.
Your problem.
Okay, let's go back to Judy. Already in progress. Judy, thank you for joining us. Interesting point. No, please don't take it that literally. It's more about the feel and its place.
But if you did...
Oh, boy.
I mean,
this isn't
what
going
are you
the way
do,
I thought
Carrie?
It would. Yeah.
You're going to carry 5 Hershey bars around for $5?
This is like talking to you sometimes.
That would be... Really?
Yeah.
Is she to me what I am to you?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. I am so sorry for that. Wow. Wow.
I mean, I am literally translating this to you every day.
The next sound you hear, Judy, will be me hanging up the phone. But I want you to continue to listen and call again, okay?
Okay, I will.
Pat and Ron are just around the corner. How about the butterscotch?
Oh, yeah.
I can't name anything. What do you call those things?
Well, I believe they're called butterscotch candy, Steve.
Okay.
Yeah. Root beer barrels could make, I guess, a cameo. You get to make your own list, but let's just not get hung up on either the literal use of them as currency or the shape of them as currency.
How do you make change?
Well, for it, I think that's a better sort of explanation of what I'm going after here. So I would give you 100 Jelly Bellies for a whole Hershey bar. To me, that seems to be a sort of equivalent value.
Okay, get that.
A Snickers bar, you know, that's just the mother of them all. So it has to be our highest denomination at $100. That doesn't translate so well. But I also think maybe 10 Jelly Bellies would be worth a candy corn.
See, I'm sorry to get down in this with you, but the Snickers really is a workmanlike yeoman candy bar.
That should be the 20, shouldn't it?
The 20 or the 5 or something like that. Yeah. And then you have to pick like Ghirardelli or something for the 100.
Yeah, maybe. Fair enough, Steve. Listen, I'm not against changing this out. As long as you understand the concept. Remember, Sam's the one that said we need to have gummy bears in there, so I'm working on that too. I've posted the picture of me at the whiteboard looking at the new U.S. currency this way on my Twitter account. You can comment there. I'm WGN King John on
Twitter.
There's
a reason to follow.
There's other stuff too. By the way, about our previous conversation with the woman from Harvard, who's a Chicagoan, by the way, on gun statistics, you wrote, "Hey, John, wow, such BS. Where is the criminal element? I'm sure they're super honest about gun ownership." And this one said, "I'm not buying her stats." A lot of you are saying things like that. I am. I think people who dedicate their careers to studying certain things are maybe better at it than you or I, who have sort of a gut reaction to things. She said she does sort of try and correlate their research with other research, and they know that maybe illegal gun owners have a reason to lie about it. But I think if the numbers aren't perfect, I think the point is pretty well made, and that is most folks don't have guns. It's 2:45. This is WGN.
When I wake up in the morning, love.
You know this commercial on TV all the time? You've seen it, right?
Sunlight hurts my eyes.
Jennifer Hudson comes upon a guy singing.
It's something without warning, love.
He's busking and she sneaks up behind him.
It's heavy on my mind.
And then she starts to sing
too.
Then
I look at you.
And the world's all right
with me.
Just one look at you.
And I know it's gonna be
a lovely love.
So they sort of did a full version of the song, and I posted it on my Facebook page because I hate to say this, but I'm a fan of the commercial. Lord, she can sing. She's just adorable. He's a good-looking guy. You want to root for him, and he's a good singer, too. And I wondered if there was a full version of the song and kind of how that commercial went down, how legit was it? And so this is what I understand to be the case, that he was told American Family Insurance wants you to be in a commercial, so go stand there and sing. And he didn't know that anybody else was going to sing with him. He thought he would be background music or background singer in a spot or something. So he's just standing there with his case open. People are dropping change in as they walk by, and he's singing. He doesn't know Jennifer Lawrence is going to come up, and they had not rehearsed that. So then what you hear in the commercial is them spontaneously, for the first time, reacting and interacting. And it's pretty good. It's pretty good. So I'm a sucker for that sort of thing. And if you want to see his full reaction and how they actually did it, then you can go to my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. I don't know what to make of this conversation between the president and Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State. It's not a conversation. But they're in a disagreement about some stuff. And the president has found himself in a position to say that he thinks his IQ is higher than the Secretary of State's. And you never know if President Trump is ever kidding about things or not. Like, oh, yeah, I'll bet I can run faster than you. Oh, yeah, well, I'll bet you I'm smarter than you. No, you're dumber than me. I don't know if it's like that. I don't think President Trump is capable of elbowing somebody in the ribs unless he's trying to push the Prime Minister of Montenegro out of the way. So I really think Donald Trump felt sort of challenged by the notion that the Secretary of State called him a moron or worse. And so then he has to say he cannot take that. He has to say, no, well, then we'll have to have an IQ test and you know, he better be worried or whatever the tweet was. So then I went online today because I was thinking about IQ tests. My whole life, it seems, is a rabbit hole that I go down every day for you. And I found myself taking IQ tests online. The first one that pops up when you do IQ test and something else, it gives you the IQ test. And it's really interesting. 20 questions, the first six or seven of which are pretty easy. Which shape should go in the missing spot? And you have options. What word best represents these four? Which of these items does not belong? And you're just clicking along going, I'm a pretty smart dude. And then you get to number seven and you go, I have no idea which shape should go in place of the missing shape. And it's like, oh, geez, I don't know. And the clock is ticking. Anyway, I got through the thing. And so then, but it took me like, it was a 20-minute test, which I sort of took twice because halfway through it, the first time somebody walked in. So I started it up again, which I think is technically cheating. And when I got done with the thing, after about now 35 minutes of my day, I then hit, okay, and you so want it to be a good number. You're so proud of yourself. But you're also so hopeful that it doesn't show you're a moron. That, you know, they show like, Flipper, Donald Trump, you're worried about where you're going to line up. And it said, for $19.99, we'll send you the results. Oh, for God's sakes. Now I know how smart I am. Not very. Are you kidding me? I got to send you $20 to find out how smart I am. I know how smart I am. I'm not pretty smart. What kind of a moron am I? But then I did find a free one by Googling free IQ test. Hello. And that's just 8 questions. Violetta, you should go on my Facebook page and take the IQ test.
I might. I might get suckered into paying $99 for it, though.
No, that's... And don't do that. If you take... Because here's the thing. Anybody that then pays $20 for the results, they should subtract 20 points from your IQ just right there.
How many points do you get for getting your name right?
I hope a lot. So the one that I posted is just 8 questions, and it showed that I have a high IQ.
Well, you get what you pay for, right?
That's kind of what I'm thinking. What they do is they give you 8 pretty easy questions. It doesn't take long. They know you want to feel good about this. You want to feel good about this. So I think everybody gets an A. You know, good job. Everybody gets a trophy is the test I think I posted. And then I do think they want you to take a more comprehensive test, and that will cost you $99.99.
I just think deep down people know how smart they are.
Okay, let's play that game. How smart do you think you are?
I think I'm pretty average, but I'm savvy, which counts for a lot in my life because I can get by just fine with it.
How about you, Kim Gordon? Is that you that just strolled into the newsroom?
It is me.
How smart do you think you are?
I think I'm definitely above average.
I think everybody... will say, and by the way, I think the two of you are above average. But I think
and
it's,
I would say you're more above average than me. I would put you in the really higher, smart
yes,
guy
oh,
category.
I so totally would not. I am so a B student. You know, I'm fine.
No.
I'm fine, but I'm very much a
well,
B
that's
student.
That's the thing about IQ. Does it really measure success?
I don't think it does, because I think what I've always done in my life, say I work at WGN Radio, good for me, right? It's not because I'm real smart or super talented, but I've kind of figured out how to achieve, like I'm relentless about some things, I'll say that. But I don't think I'm super talented or smart. And I think that's where we get confused.
But I'm saying even deep down, even when you're not going to admit it, you know how smart you are. When you lay your head down at night, you know.
Yeah, I think that's very true, Violetta. And that's the thing. People go, oh, John, we think you're pretty smart. I go, no, I have smart people on my show. Trust me, when I lay down at night, I know what I don't know, and it's a lot.
Well, and I think some days you're smarter than others.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you. Boy,
depends.
That's the truth. What's the matter, Elif? Elif, poor Elif. She's sitting there listening to this. She shares an office with me, okay?
Well, it's just... If you have the grit is what factors into, I think, intelligence.
I think grit is the new intelligence.
It's emotional intelligence.
I don't know that EQ is the same as IQ, but I think those are completely discounted. Like the president saying, I'll square off in an IQ test. Not only is Tillerson smarter than Donald Trump, but Tillerson probably has more, I don't know.
I don't care what his IQ is. I just care that he's
Donald Trump you're speaking about?
Either him or Rex Tillerson.
Right,
anyway.
It's competence, right?
Yeah, competence and effort, really.
So that's, I think that's key, too. Who cares how smart Donald Trump is? Who cares what his IQ is? Does he strike you as a person who's competent at his job?
And what's your decision-making power? Smart or dumb?
Right, like if you have to decide, should we blow up North Korea or not? That's a big one. You have to get that. You have to make that decision correctly.
Right. Well, and does that really matter what your IQ
is? I don't know that it does.
But you need to know the history there to be able to make a competent decision.
Absolutely.
So being president of the United States comes along with a lot of regular intelligent notions that you need to know.
Sure, but I think you have to be like disciplined, like, okay, say any of us were going to try and figure out what to do with North Korea and we had to decide if we're going to blow them up or not. And helpful to that would be knowing a history of North Korea and U.S.-Korean relations. A C student could get a book and read it, you know, and kind of figure it out. I'm not sure that the president is that interested in doing the homework on these issues. So when he brags about his IQ, whatever it is, I'm not persuaded that that's all that helpful to us or even him. It's 256. The IQ test that you're going to love is on my Facebook page. As debonair as they get, Ro Khan has strolled into the studio with Anna DeVlantis. And you look lovely today,
too. Thank you. Ro had a speaking engagement, so he's extra special spiffy today.
Dang, son.
Yes, I'm not wearing my normal seedless T-shirt from the Aerosmith 1989 tour.
Or your members-only jacket, which you wear sometimes.
And my sunglasses, which, of course, I use to rob banks. I was actually speaking to a law enforcement group, and no one arrested me today, so I figure that I'm in the clear
good.
Now.
Oh, phew.
Yeah, so I got that going for me. Well, we're watching the weather. For those who are waiting for the Cubs game to start in a couple of hours, and we will we'll let you know about that. Our own Kevin Powell is at Wrigley Field thinking thoughts, the positive things, sending his positive ways, Moriarty, to the Cub faithful.
Well, if it gets rained out or rain delayed, I mean, the game 4 will be played here, so we're not going to lose anything.
Tomorrow or – although there could be a couple days of rain, which – yeah, just – they won – last night, or yesterday afternoon, despite themselves.
Sure.
Totally agree with you on that. Are you mad at Joe Maddon a little bit? Or not mad, but you're just like, oh boy, here we go again. This is playoff management, and it's maddening.
Well, I'm not going to argue with him his results last year or yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it just is. It is what it is. I mean, people got mad at him all season.
That doesn't make him right.
I know, but it is interesting. Listen. Ditka's not always right, but he's our guy.
We like him anyway.
Yeah. I'm out of here.
And Dusty Baker got booed on the way out, but they were happy with what Dusty Baker did later,
they should have been cheering Dusty Baker. But
fans love that.
Are you going to play the Ditka audio?
Yeah, in the top five, yes.
Are you thinking about not playing it as a service to America?
No, I mean, it's he's a member of the family of the WGN and the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis' family.
That's true.
And when we screw up, we always make fun of our own people.
We do. Okay.
Just ask Violetta after spends all of her time in the barrel here.
It's brutal, really, when we screw up.
So after five, it is what it is, right.
See ya.